Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you with the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by two bankers and a builder. We're going to talk about real estate here in Arizona. With me is Doug Reynolds, a 30-year banking veteran with Washington Federal, Paris Davis, who's in charge of the retail banking division at Washington Federal, and Dennis Webb, vice president of operations for Fulton Homes. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Thank you for being here. Paris, why don't you start us off and tell us a little bit about the work that you do. What's your role at Washington Federal, and how is the bank serving folks in the community?
Well, thank you. So, again, Paris Davis with Washington Federal. I've been with the company for 35 years. Happy to be here in Arizona for 18 years, and prior to that, I was in the Oregon market. So how we are serving our clientele in all, across our eight-state footprint is really we are a bank that's there about relationships. So we are there to help people from the beginning of their financial career all the way to the retirement years. And we can do that in a variety of methods. So we're excited to be here and help people. And I think what makes us different is that we are truly a relationship bank.
That's marvelous. I want to hear more about that and also how you got into that role. Doug, you are also with Washington Federal. What's the bank do from your perspective, and what are you excited about in terms of your work?
Well, again, having done this for 30 years, I've seen a lot of different things happen in the 30-year period I've done it. Washington Federal is a great place. We listen to what people want and try to put things in and things that work for both of us. It's a team. You know, we try to do things that it's a win-win situation for not just us, but the client also.
Yeah, marvelous. I mean, the way that banks have evolved and stayed the same is a fascinating thing. We might get into some of those dynamics. Dennis Webb, you are the vice president of operations for Fulton Homes. Tell us about your company and how you serve folks.
Well, we're a little different. We're a local builder. We've been building in Phoenix for 40 years. We all came out of the retail business, which makes us quite unique. We all have retail clothing backgrounds, and so we run our home building business like a retail store, where we look at things like automatic stock replenishment and open to buys. And the most important thing is finding out what your customer wants and give it to them.
Yeah, that's a very different perspective than I guess some of the folks out there. You've also been an innovator in your 22 years with the company. You've brought a lot of technology from that retail perspective
exactly.
Into your operations. Talk a little bit about what's unique in that regard.
So Ira Fulton, who's our owner, has always been at the forefront of technology. It's very important for him and the company to be able to have the very latest things and the things that'll bring us to the forefront and really make sure that the customer is serviced by that. To have technology for technology's sake isn't worth it, but to have technology where the customer can benefit from it is tremendous. So everything is in our company is paperless. We have a system where buyers can price out their entire home before they even come in the sales office. We're completely transparent with all of our customers, and we're the only builder in the country that does this.
It's interesting to get in front of technology in that way. So many people are reacting to the inevitable changes that the consumer-facing internet and smartphones and apps have brought to every industry. But there's a sense in which it sounds like you have gone where the puck is going in the hockey metaphor.
The builder industry has always been slow to the take. They're doing things kind of like they did about 100 years ago and very archaic in how they prepare things and how they go about their business. So it's been a struggle and for the industry, and we're leading the forefront, and we're saying the buyers want this stuff. They want information. They're online all the time. It's a completely different buyer than it was 20 years ago, and we've reacted to it, and many of the other people haven't.
Let's talk a bit about the real estate market itself. We certainly are in a dynamic market here in Arizona, historically as well as in the recovery from the Great Recession. A lot of things have changed. A lot of old established patterns have shifted. What's happening now? Where are homes being built? What's going on from your perspective in the real estate market in general, Doug?
Yeah, we're seeing stuff built on the outskirts of the town. You know, there's some small infill stuff in the city of Phoenix and some places like that, but a lot of growth on the west side, a lot of growth in the East Valley, growth down in Maricopa again, Casa Grande, I think is starting to see some growth here also. So I think what I like to see is it's sustainable. You know, we had a point in time in our lives where it wasn't sustainable. I think we all remember those days. And I think we're seeing a lot of that right now as a key to our continued growth and stuff like that.
Yeah, I saw an article just a few days ago that over the next 25 years, 40% of the growth is going to be in the West Valley. Certainly a lot of room there. Dennis, what are you seeing in terms of this, the micro geographies that are playing out here?
Well, you're right. You know, the growth has to be out because in is out. And so we need to look at West Valley. We've got a tremendous amount of homes that we're working on over in the West Valley. We're also doing a bunch in the East Valley in Queen Creek and in that area. And so we're strong in Maricopa. And I think the growth has to come from the outside. We're a little bit different than some of the other people where we'll take large pieces. We'll take a piece of 1,000 homes or 1,500 homes and put three or four different products in there and have kind of a shopping center approach, again, a retail analogy. And have that buyer be able to buy a medium-sized home and a larger home and maybe an extra-large home and all within the same area, all within the same community. And then we take those communities, we make them a little nicer. We have aquatic centers and wide open spaces and way more amenities. And with that amount of lots, you can do that because it's an economy of scale thing. So, and Washington Federal's been fairly helpful in helping us finance some of those things. It's hard to do on your own when you're building these huge master plans.
Absolutely. And I hope to get into some of the financing vehicles and different ways in which that lending plays out. Paris, in your role as the retail banking division manager at Washington Federal, you're responsible for operations at the bank's branches in Phoenix, Sun City, Sun City West, Glendale, Goodyear, Yuma, a whole spectrum of different markets. What are you seeing from that point of view in terms of what's happening in the real estate market in the last 5 years? What are the trends? Where are we at now?
You know, I think there's been quite a few changes. You know, after the housing boom that we had earlier, people are a little bit more conservative. So I think with people, they're really truly looking at their investment dollars, how much home can they build for the amount of money that they want to invest. So I think we're finding strong markets. We're all the way up from Prescott Valley all the way down to Yuma, Arizona. So we're finding strong markets in all of our areas. The buyers that we have now today are a little bit more, I want to say, sophisticated. They're doing their homework. And I think technology is providing all those tools to them that they didn't have 20 years ago. So they're doing the research. They're educated. They're sophisticated in their pricing. They want to know, what do I get? What does this mean for me in the long run? And we're finding where people are doing probably a little bit more investment homes or even their forever home. So construction for us is on an all-time high, and people are wanting to build their forever home.
You know, there's certainly a sense in which professional roles that were built on information asymmetry, you know, we have the specific details, you don't, that gives us leverage. That has really changed with the internet, with the amount of data that's available, with the amount of companies that have made an inroad into consumer-facing information products, the Zillows and all the rest, have really changed the game for everyone, from the agents to the brokers to the lenders to the builders. Doug, you also have a unique position in that you oversee the 31 branches statewide. So we have a tendency to talk a lot about Maricopa County, but there's more to Arizona than what's going on here in the Valley. What does it look like from your point of view?
Well, as Paris said, we do stuff up in Prescott Valley, and Prescott Valley has been a magnet for California relocation people. Retirement years or just wanting to get out of the rigmarole of California. You talked about a while ago, the traffic that you saw as a child over there. It's not any better these days. So seen a lot of growth there. Tucson, well, I've got a lender down in Tucson, and Tucson's seeing some pretty good, again, sustainable growth down there and different areas around the Tucson metropolitan area.
We heard a little bit from Dennis about what makes Fulton Homes unique. Let's talk about Washington Federal for a minute. What makes the bank unique as it relates to residential building?
So, you know, with Washington Federal, I mean, we've been around for 102 years. So that's a long time. So with us, we've been here for 102 years. We're a relationship bank. And some of the items that makes us unique is our number one is we're a portfolio lender. And so I want to say we're a fully portfolio lender, which people don't understand what that means.
Unpack it for us so that we really get the implications of
that. So what I do when I'm out talking to individuals and I'm talking to them about their financing needs, and they may say, gosh, I'm going over to ABC Bank and that's where I'm going to do my mortgage with. And I'm like, you know, that's wonderful. So tell me what drew you to ABC Bank and tell me what that experience looks like and what's your future relationship going to be? Little questions I may ask is after you close your loan, who are you going to make your payments to? Is ABC Bank going to continue being your service provider? And the answer 99% of the time is no, they're not. They're going to sell my loan. And so I'm like, so help me understand, how is ABC Bank a relationship bank that's going to be there to help you? The difference with Washington Federal is we are a portfolio lender. That means you're going to sit down with one loan officer from your application throughout the entire processing document, the closing, if it's for construction. We're going to be there when you get to enter your home for the very first time. And we're going to continue to maintain that loan for the life of the loan. So we are your relationship bank, and we're going to be there the entire time for you. That's what makes us different.
Yeah, to expand on that, in the last recession, with us having that capability, we worked with a lot of clients who had home loans, and we restructured them. They're on our balance sheet, and we worked with them. And I can't remember the statistic. You might know, Paris, but I'm going to say 95 plus or more of those loans that we restructured ended up paying us. People were able to stay in their houses, a lot different than a lot of other places.
Yeah, we are different. We are not, like I said, we are a relationship bank portfolio lender. So we want to be here when you're purchasing your first home with Fulton Homes or with Washington Federal. We want to be here for that middle home when you have your children, then now you have two or three children. And then we want to be there for your retirement home when it's time for downsizing. So we are that institution that can see you through all phases of your life. And we'll be there.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the financing. It plays out obviously differently with individual buyers versus home builders. But take us into that world a little bit. What are some of the products you're working with? What are some of their unique features? And how do you help guide a client to the right vehicle for their needs?
Many times, I think it really starts in the interview process. So many times when a client is walking in, they may have an idea if they're ready to purchase a home, or sometimes they're just trying to find out, gosh, what can I afford? Right? They want to get credit approved. And so part of that experience really should be sitting down with that individual and say, tell me what's important to you. Where are your values? What's important to you for now? Do you plan on being in this home 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Where do you plan on being? And I think a really good loan officer will sit down and take the time to answer all those questions. And I think the best thing any consumer can do is ask all those questions. You should walk away feeling confident going, gosh, they're going to take care of me. I have all my answers. And then finding out what's important to that individual, that's who your best loan officers are going to be, instead of just slamming them into a product because I want to hurry up and get that loan closed and make my commission. We don't do that.
You've all been in your various industries for a long enough period of time to have seen certain trends in terms of the mindset, the emotions, the knowledge base that people are working with. What's different about today's buyers as opposed to some other generations? First of all, who are they? And what's your observations about that? Dennis, do you have thoughts there?
We have two main buyers right now, and they're buying the same floor plans in the same communities. And you'd go, well, okay, why? How does that work? You know, and so the first was millennials. And we're getting the upper end of millennials, both income and age-wise, and they're buying a $300,000 or $325,000 house, and they're not putting a whole bunch of extras into the house, but they're thrilled to be there. They love our communities. They want to step up. They don't want a lower-price home way out in, you know, someplace they don't want to live. So they're closer in. There might be Gilbert or Queen Creek or Glendale or someplace like that. And then we have the baby boomers that are downsizing, and as Paris talked about, the forever house. And they're coming in, and they're spending a ton of money on options, and it's their last move. And they also want a nice community. They want to have the amenities. They want to have a aquatic center. They want jogging spaces. They want clubhouses. They want all these things. And they're both buying the same house in the same communities. But one thing that's different when 10, 20 years ago, they've got a tremendous amount of information. And they know more about our houses than we do sometimes. They have been on the internet for hours and hours and hours, and they've researched everything, and they know everything about it. And in you as a builder, if you don't give that buyer the right information where they want it, you'll just be ignored. You don't even get a visit because there's so many choices, and that buyer is so astute today.
It's interesting that you pointed to a difference as well in their purchasing process, that the baby boomers are really looking to trick it out, all the upgrades and amenities and various things. And the millennials, especially that older millennial generation with more money and more years under their belt, are not. They're going for more basic options. Why do you think that is?
Income. And just they just can't afford it. They'll still be at $350,000 for a nice house in one of our nice communities, but they're not going to be able to spend the $400,000, $500,000, or $600,000 that other people do. Plus, the families are getting families are formulating later in life, and so you don't have three kids. You know, 20 years ago, our buyer was a 45-year-old male and a 42-year-old female with two kids, and they went to high school and junior high in Gilbert, okay? That's not our buyer anymore. The buyer is so diverse and so different. We have single women, single men, divorcees, couples living together, in-laws, boomerang kids. It's so diverse that we try to make our plans as diverse as they are. And so if you have a family of this sort, we can do this. And if you want this, you have that. So you have a dual master, you got a mother-in-law suite, you got different ways, because people are living completely different today than they were even 10, 15 years ago.
That's a theme that's recurred over and over in this studio as we've talked to experts from a variety of different industries. Some of it is just generational. It's a sign of the times, the deeper penetration of technology into our lives. And some of it's very specific to Arizona as the demographics change here with a lot of out-of-state flowing in, as you said, a lot of folks from California coming and other places as well. And it's really causing a lot of different industries to take a good hard look at some of what they've taken for granted. And yet, through it all, relationships matter. Even though there's so many more technology-based financial transactions available, from PayPal and Venmo to different kinds of investment vehicles, portfolio management, et cetera, we can do everything from our smartphones these days. There's still a value in, as you said, Paris, that face-to-face relationship, that sense of trust that comes from knowing there's a person who understands you and what you want. Dennis, how does the relationship building play a role in your company?
Oh, it's key. It's one of the most important things we do. We're strong supporters of the community. We give a lot of money to various charities. We've given over $200 million to ASU. We got several buildings are named after Ira and Mary Lou Fulton. So we're really strong into that. But I think the thing that we look at is our salespeople. Our average salesperson has been with us 15 years. That's average. We have 20 of them. They're the best in the business. And the relationship between our salespeople and the buyers are tremendous. We have many times that people have bought, different generations have bought Fulton Homes, and then we've had people that have bought three or four different Fulton Homes, and if you have a small, medium, and large, you just move up and things like that. And they'll buy from the same salesperson. And so the other thing that we have is we have a 13,000 square foot design center, and we got five designers that are the best in the business, and that's also relationship building. And then when they buy their third Fulton home, they want that same designer that designed their house 6 years ago. And it's just, that whole relationship is key to our business.
I think that is, sorry to interrupt, but I think that's true for all of us. So technology is great. It gives us an opportunity to look and view, but people like myself, man, I want to touch, I want to feel, I want to talk to a person. If I have a question, I want to look somebody in the eye and say, help me understand this process. And many times the internet and your technology can't do that. So at the end, I think at the end of the day, people are just people, right? We want to talk to each other. We want to have, you want to have that trusted advisor. You want somebody to help you through the process when you have questions.
Doug, you've been in banking for 30 years with a number of different institutions. What are you learning and continuing to be surprised by in your interactions with people? What really matters and how do you focus on those relationships?
You know, I go back to, if you take care of people, they will work with you. They'll do great stuff for you. The Fulton Homes, I talk to them many times. They'll have a community and someone will buy a home in the community. 2 or 3 years later, they'll move to another home within the same community, just a different area. And that's kind of what I focus on in the world is, taking care of that relationship, that person. It's a lot easier building relationships or that easy phone call when someone refers you in as opposed to knocking on doors and stuff like that. And again, just relationships are key. It's not always what you know, it's who you know. And I think that helps out a lot.
Let's talk a minute about developing the people you work with, because clearly if relationships matter, then it matters a lot. Dennis talked about the salespeople in his company. I'd love to hear a little bit more from the perspective of the bank. How do you nurture and train and develop the humans that are the front line of those relationships? Talk a little bit about what sorts of leadership development you've benefited from or what you see as making a difference there.
I think my team of people, I've got 8 people that work with me, and we're involved. We always kind of talk about what's going on, who's doing what, who's where, and having that open communication. So God forbid something happens and someone's not in the office that day, we need help. People are familiar with what's going on in the office. I try to keep my employees actively involved, give them the ability to make some decisions that they need to make without having to run and find somebody else, and just continue to work side them and help them grow to be an important person in our organization.
Paris, you've been a member of Washington Federal since 1984. So you must have gone through a lot of different phases of your own life coinciding with your employment at the company. I see here in your bio that you graduated from the Washington Federal Executive Leadership Academy. Talk a little bit about this topic, people development. How have you benefited? How have you seen others around you? What do folks really need and how do they get it?
I think those are great topics. And both Doug and I both had an opportunity to serve on the Executive Leadership Academy. Different years, different projects that we were working on. And I think, whenever you're dealing with in an industry that deals with people, which is all of us, right? So you have to enjoy working with people and you have to have a goal of being a great leader and wanting someone to do better and excel and provide the service. So Dennis is talking about relationships. Doug is talking about relationships. And that's what I'm talking about also is that people are people. And so when trying to develop for the retail side on that front level, that entry level teller who is going to be providing assistance, you want somebody who's engaged, who's positive, who smiles and said, gosh, what can I do to help you today? What questions do you have? And so that's, I think, for us on trying to find that core person who truly loves to work with people, wants to learn, and has an opportunity to maybe change somebody's life. We help people on the consumer side of it, the business side of it, help build their dream home. So we have a rare opportunity here in my industry. We work with numbers and we figure out the computer stuff. I get all that. But we also have an opportunity to change people's lives. We get to see them having the babies, having marriages or graduations, vacations. And I think that's the unique piece of it. So find the individuals that really want to work with people and make a difference in somebody's lives. And that's some of the things we talk about at Washington Federal is love what you do and make a difference. And Doug and I both have an opportunity, like I said earlier, about sitting on the Executive Leadership Academy. And it was a grueling process of 9 months. And my gosh, we put in more hours than I thought were humanly possible. And it was such a rewarding experience. And so for myself, going to our executive management committee and our CEO, and I'm like, thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity and making me work my buns off, because I put in a lot of hours, but it was a very rewarding experience for me.
Dennis, your sales team has been with you on average a long time, but you must also be keeping an edge by by training them, by expanding them, and also by attracting new talent to the company at all levels, not just the consumer-facing side, but the crews and the project managers and all of it. There's humans involved throughout the process. Share a little bit about your insights into what really gets the best out of people and how you create that culture at Fulton Homes.
Well, I think the whole thing is culture. And going with the salespeople, fortunately, we don't have to do a lot of hiring because people don't leave. And as long as they do their great job and they're taking care of our customers in a stellar manner, we leave them alone. We don't have sales meetings. We don't have a sales manager. We'd rather have the customer being taken care of than have meetings. And as a company, we don't do very many meetings. We're kind of weird that way. But it pays off. When it comes down to our construction and customer care crews, then that's a little more challenging because some of them are entry-level positions, but we're really in the business of developing people. And it's really rewarding to take a person and make them a tech two and then an assistant project manager and then a project manager and then he's running several projects. And these projects are huge. I mean, some of these projects are $25, $30 million. And so these are big responsibilities. And so what we try to do is the most important thing is to make sure that everyone fits in with the culture because a lot of people don't. Our culture is way different than other companies. We don't have the political arena. We don't have the backbiting. It's family-oriented. And we leave people alone and we say, hey, we're going to give you the tools to do your job, but we're going to make you responsible for it. And we don't have time to sit there and tell you what to do every day. A lot of people thrive in that environment. A lot of people fail in that environment. And we got to find out real quickly where they're going to be.
How do you go about doing that? I'll give you an example. Not too long ago in here, we had Vincent Serpico, who is the founder of Serpico Dev, a software development shop. And he was speaking to something very similar with regard to their team of developers, many of whom actually are based in Mexico, as well as their people here in Arizona, and a fairly rigorous probationary period that he put people through because they're positioning themselves as a leader in getting your project done on time and on budget, which is not the way things normally go in software and maybe isn't the way things go in other kinds of building projects as well. How do you create and maintain that culture and the hands-off aspect that you spoke to?
You have to be very good at identifying people and hiring the right people in the first place. Now, in the case of salespeople, it's real simple. I hire the salespeople and I've hired three in the last 10 years, so I'm not very busy on that part, okay? But I say, okay, you have to have 5 years of new home sales experience. You got to sell $10 million a year, and then you got to get a sponsor. Well, what's a sponsor? Well, you got to find someone that works for Fulton Homes that'll sponsor you. Well, I don't know anyone. Well, you better find out. You better get to know one. Because I'm going to ask them, after trailing you around for a couple weeks, would you take this person as a partner? And if they say yes, you'd be hired. If they say no, you're going to have to work for Pulte.
I read an article a while back. I don't remember the magazine, but it was something like Forbes or Business Week or something, that the CEO of a large company had as part of his senior leadership hiring process that he would ask the shortlisted applicant to travel with them for 2 days. And most people, for whatever reason, never realized that this was part of the evaluation. But it was everything from, you know, do you show up on time at the airport, to how do you treat the concierge at the hotel, to how do you conduct yourself after hours, and really putting people into the environment where they would be working, which is very different than the environment of an interview. Anybody can fake their way through, and not anybody, but a lot of talented artists, BS artists, can fake their way through an interview. It's when it counts in the role that we learn that process. What about at the bank? How do you hire? How do you find the right people for these critical roles?
You know, fortunately, I haven't had to hire a lot of people lately. I've worked with my team for many, many years. So to me, it kind of bodes well from that standpoint. But, you know, we're looking for people with integrity. You know, we want to give them a job, give them the tools, as Dennis said, to get it done, and kind of watch them to make sure that they're kind of going in that direction and what they can do. I think one of Steve Jobs' many famous quotes is, he goes, we hire people so they can tell us what to do, not so we can tell them what to do. And I always try to get my people, encourage them to give us some ideas, suggestions. What can we do better? What can we make? How can we make our lives easier and get things done quicker, you know, easier and faster? And those are the kind of people that I look for when I'm out there hiring people.
Yeah, I've done a lot of unfortunately or fortunately, I've done a lot of hiring throughout my 35 years here. But, you know, for me, and I totally agree with you, it's so easy to sit there and ask just a canned interview. You know, tell me about your best qualities. What are your character traits? And people are programmed for that. So I think the idea for myself is I know I can teach people how to click on a button, how to, you know, look at information. But what I find is a little more difficult is you can't teach character. You can't teach personality. You can't teach that desire to learn. So what I try to do is when I'm sitting down with individuals is I'm like, paint me a picture. Tell me what you'd like your future to look like. What does that career look like? So I ask really broad stroked type of questions. So explain this to me, or why should I hire you? And tell me, how are you going to make my life better as a client and as a consumer? So I try to ask those type of probing questions, and you find out a little bit more about a character, because with technology and how our world is changing so much in the financial industry, and Dennis spoke about that in the builder industry, you have to have people that are adaptable. You have to be willing to change. And, you know, what I've always told individuals is I've never been the smartest person in the room. Still to this day, I'm still not the smartest person in this room. But I've always been the person who raises my hand and says, teach me, show me, let me learn. And that's how I attribute my success. And those are the type of individuals that I'm trying to look for. Somebody I would enjoy having a cup of coffee with.
You also have an important role in Washington Federal's financial education programs. You are involved with the bank's partnership with Take Charge America and the Save at School community education programs. Can you talk a little bit about how educating the communities in which you live and work plays an important role in your kind of portfolio of tasks and things you are responsible for?
You know, I think those are the fundamental duties of anybody in the financial industry. Our public education is not teaching finances. Kids in high school have no clue what a checkbook is. They just know to swipe that low debit card and hopefully they get a pass or a fail, right, a decline. So I think the financial education that we as bankers and financial people, that's a responsibility that we have on going out. And it is probably some of the most fun events that I attend. So when you go out to a bank when you go out to a school, for instance, and you're doing a Save at School, you're dealing with those fifth graders, those sixth graders that are coming with their chore money, their birthday money from grandma, and they're like, bank lady, I got my deposit. And we're like, good for you. And we're high-fiving them, giving those type of rewards for people so they understand the value of it. I think that's very important. We also do a lot of financial literacy. I do a lot with, there's so many great organizations here in Phoenix that I'm very involved with, and do financial education for adults. Really, it's just talk about how are you saving for that vacation, or how are you saving for that new car, or how do you get out of renting a home to home ownership, right? Because those are one of the most proudest moments you can have in your life is home ownership. So how do you do that? And so those are some of the things that we try to teach with financial literacy, no matter what the age is, because everybody needs some help.
You're winking at me in the middle of that because we had a conversation before turning the mics on about how I proudly rent and have for a really long time, and how in a way that made me the minnow swimming amongst the sharks here. It's certainly true that money-related topics are one of the most important subjects that are not taught and have never really been taught in school. It's fascinating to me that as education got formalized, not as far back in time as people think, you know, if you go back a couple of generations, our ancestors were not going to school in the way we go to school now. And compulsory education has really only been around since about 1920. and the kind of formalized curricula that have been deployed throughout that 20th century timeframe have not put some of the most important skills as a matter of urgency for people. Emotional intelligence has not been effectively taught. Communication has not been effectively taught. Financial literacy has not been effectively taught. A lot of the things that when somebody comes out of school, they're expected to have, they have to kind of get from somewhere, or they get essentially remedial education in fundamentals as grownups. We all are in the same boat. And as technology puts us in touch with so much more information, the ability to contextualize that information, to exercise judgment about the sources that we trust, is still something that, you know, is a much needed thing. One of the areas that is getting a lot of attention now, more so than ever, is energy efficiency, sustainability, the environment. Dennis, Fulton Homes is a leader in this area. You were the first builder in the country to have built all homes to Energy Star version 3 standards. You've been recognized as Energy Star's Partner of the Year, et cetera, et cetera. Most of us only know what Energy Star is because we have yellow stickers on our hot water heaters or air conditioning.
They're blue.
Units. Okay, good. What's the yellow one?
Yeah, I have yellow, I think.
Yeah,
so.
Those are appliances.
Fine.
Only everything else is blue.
Everything else is blue.
Yeah.
Talk to us, Dennis, about the difference between blue and yellow and how Fulton Homes leads the way with regard to energy efficiency and sustainable building and things of that nature.
So last week, I was in Washington, D.C. 183 people got the Energy Star Partner of the Year awards from all over the country, all industries. So there's people from General Motors and Johnson & Johnson and Merck and Lowe's and all these huge companies, and there's Fulton Homes. Little builder in Tempe, Arizona. It's our fifth year in a row we've won the Energy Star Partner of the Year award. We're quite proud of that. 1,000 people at this banquet at the Washington Hilton. It was a spectacular event, okay? Someone has to go.
And you did. What does it take to win that award, and why does it matter?
It matters because it shows that we're in the top 1% of builders, okay? And we take great pride in not only having energy-efficient homes, but healthy homes as well. Another organization that we're very proud of is the EPA's Indoor Air Plus program, where we won the first and only Leader of the Year award last November. We think it's probably even more, although energy efficiency is very important, we think that healthy homes might be more important. And I think by having a home that people can breathe in and have quality air that's superior, we have an asthma problem in Arizona with children. 12% of our kids have asthma. And when we can give them a better home, boy, now you're talking about making a difference in people's lives. And we've had people that have said, God, I've had kids with asthma, and they've thrown away their respirators and things like that. And you go, wow, is it worth doing this? You bet. Does it cost a little more? Yeah. But if we can build a highly energy efficient house, and the houses are tighter today, and they're way more energy efficient, and, you know, another thing, you're probably paying a ton of money in utility bills because you probably have an old rental unit that's inefficient, and you would pay half of that in a new energy efficient home that's an Energy Star and has a HERS rating of about 50, you know. So, but that's another story. But I think that we've just taken it upon ourselves and making sure that we're the leaders in this. And between healthy homes and energy efficient homes and sustainability, those are things that are very, very important to us.
There's been a lot of changes in the materials, in the design, in the technology. I mean, where I live, all the way up in Anthem, a lot of the homes were built in 2004 and 2005, and they do not. So that's not that long ago, and they don't meet those high standards. Talk about some of the general trends and what folks need to be aware of. So if someone is in the market now, or they're renting and you successfully convince them.
Which I will.
To make the
leap. It's a matter of time.
What do they need to know about what to explore? What are their options? What's most important?
So here's the real key. Energy Star 3.0 came out in January of 2012. That's 6 years ago, okay? We're now on 3.1, but the differences between 3.0 and 3.1 are negligible. The big difference was between 2.5 and 3.0. So if your house was built after January of 2012, you've got a highly energy efficient house. If it was built before that, you're in trouble, okay? And so the difference is they've decided to just make a tighter home. And so the insulation is better, the windows are better, there's no gaps, they seal all the gaps. We happen to use 16 SEER air conditioning in all of our homes. We have MERV 8 filters. We have fresh air technology where we pump in fresh air. The houses are so tight today, you have to actually pump in fresh air to get that bad air out to help with the healthy home deal, okay? So the houses are just built so much better today than they were 6 years ago. It's amazing. And your bill would be probably 40% of what it was back then.
In a place like Arizona, where our environment has extremes, we have the dust, the heat, the monsoons, all the things. And of course, also the critters that we share this land with. It's all the more important here, but it's important everywhere. And I'm intrigued, Dennis, by what you're pointing to here. We've heard similar things in this studio from commercial builders who say we build to LEED standards, but now it's going beyond LEED and it gets into wellness and it gets into the quality of people's lives, their health and their happiness, whether at work or at home. It depends a lot on the environment, the physical environment, the quality of the air, the light, the noise, etc. And so it's fascinating to me that that's something at the forefront of your work. Are there other aspects, Dennis, of home building that have changed a lot that people need to understand, or is that pretty much the central area of innovation?
The problem is the big talk now is, can you do a manufactured house under a controlled environment with our labor shortages and all those kind of problems? That seems to be the most logical thing, to have houses built in factories and then brought out and assembled versus having people drive 50, 60 miles away to go to Anthem or someplace and build houses. So far, it hasn't penciled out. It will eventually. It has to because of our labor situation. But I think most of the advances in housing have come from the technology part of the envelope, the building envelope, and the thermal envelope. And we're looking at things in the future that we're looking at right now, you know, circadian rhythm and lighting and things like that. The people go, what the hell is that, you know? And we're serious about it. We're looking at, you know, filtration systems that will make the air even better, and different ways of sealing off your attic, and different ways of doing your air conditioner and things like that. So we're always at the forefront and looking for new ways to do it, because we're going to be making changes in the next 5-6 years. Right now, California's got a thing where in 2020 they have to have net zero houses. So they got to have solar, they got to have produce zero house, zero zero emissions and zero zero energy bills. And so that'll follow here in Arizona shortly thereafter. Everything that starts in California follows the rest of the country.
Well, you know, you and I, Dennis, both grew up in Southern California 1 or 2 years apart. And I remember as a kid, of course, Southern California, we don't have snow days, but we had smog days. And the air quality, especially out in the Inland Empire where we lived, was so bad that I remember coming in summer nights for dinner, coming in from playing outside and just inhaling in the air-conditioned air of the house. There was a certain specific kind of pain in the chest. And, you know, California tightened up a lot of its regulation in a number of different industries, and 20 years later doesn't have that problem. Pay more money for gas, but, you know, certain other things have changed. In banking as well, there's a lot of technology innovation, some of which has made it through to consumers and a lot of which has not yet. When it comes to things that haven't yet seen a full rollout, like building on top of the blockchain or something that may be the way we do it in 10 years or 15 or 20, but it is not currently happening. What's the role of technology in shaping the experience you have with either retail customers or commercial clients. How is technology changing the game at Washington Federal, if at all? You still have branches, so you've not gone completely virtual. How has technology changed the game for you in the last 30 years or so, Doug?
I think it's been great and bad. You know, from a standpoint of good, the consumer can do, as Dennis talked about, buying a house, buying a car. You can do so much without seeing anybody, which is great. But you still need to talk to somebody at some point in time. And I think that's the piece that will always be there. Your younger generation, maybe it's a perfect scenario. They've never got to go and see anybody, never do anything. Because you can handle about anything you want to do online, whether it's deposit a check, take a picture with your phone. I mean, there's just so many things that are good. But you kind of lose that little bit of a relationship. And being an old guy like myself, you still like to, you know, put a name to a face and stuff like that. But I think if you utilize our technology that's out there, it's a great thing. You can do so many things differently in this day and age. But at the end of the day, it's still nice to pick up the phone and call somebody, though.
Paris, what about you? What's your perspective on technology, both as a force for good and as something introducing new layers of insulation between people? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, just like Doug said, I think there's more opportunities now where people, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, when people would get their Social Security check, they had to come into the bank to make a deposit. Those are no longer the days. Those are all direct deposit. Most people have direct deposit in their payroll, their Social Security. You do online bill pay. You can check your balances. I can check my balance right now on my phone. So we have all of that. Technology's brought so many different opportunities for us. So I think it allows us, as a consumer, it allows you more time, right? Because before you had to get to the bank and you had to walk in Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, right? And if you didn't make it, then gosh, you weren't able to make your deposit or you weren't able to do something. Now technology, even like with Washington Federal, we are in that smaller percentage of institutions where you can actually do an online mortgage application. And you can upload all your documentation. So if you're sitting at home at 11 o'clock at night and you can't sleep in your pajamas, you can do a mortgage loan application. So I think that's where technology is such a great advantage for us. But then, like Doug says, is the technology does not allow you an opportunity to talk to a person. So we always try to do everything, or do your technology, but let's get involved as a person and say, hey, gosh, did you have any questions? Can I help you with this? Where are you at on this piece of it? And I think that's what we're all talking about. So technology is going to just keep increasing, right? It is what it is, and we all want it.
It absolutely is. And voice technology in particular is coming, and AI-driven voice assistants and interactions and things are going to get very good. It will always be a question, what's the role of human? Until the robots come and kill us all, that's, you know, one thing. But until then, there will always be a place for humans. It may not be the same place, the one we've taken for granted. The last time a human being answered a business phone number on the first or second ring was a few years ago. And those voice interfaces are not as good as they're going to get, clearly.
But I think there's changes in that. So it's funny because I was out in a branch once and the phones were ringing and we still answer our phones live. So I answer the phone, you know, good morning, Washington Federal. This is Paris. How may I help you? And it was quiet. And I'm like, hello? They go, you're a person. I go, I sure am. I said,
most days.
Yeah. Well, my husband may disagree sometimes, but no, but I'm like, yeah, you always get a live voice when you talk to somebody here at Washington Federal. And because I know what it's like when I have to deal with other financial situations and you have to punch in your account number, right? It's always 16 digits. And by gosh, I always mess up on that 16th digit. And then I have to start all over again. So at least here, when you're dealing with live people, if you have questions, you have a struggle, you want some answers, you can talk to somebody. So until Siri or Google tells us people are no longer relevant, I think people are relevant.
They are, for sure. I'm betting on humans. I'm long on humans, for sure. By way of wrapping up our delightful conversation here, Dennis Webb from Fulton Homes, share with us what's inspiring or exciting to you about the future, either the near future or the distant. When you look out into the future, what's coming that you're really fired up about?
I think there's a lot of things coming. I think the future is so bright. There's so many new ideas. What we've done with home design the last few years. We've kind of reacted to what the customers want. The kitchens are bigger. We have walk-in pantries. We've made the living room just an archaic thing that no one even knows what it is anymore, okay? We don't have a formal dining room, you know. People are together more. Just the way that people live is completely different today than it was 5 years ago. You know, what's it going to be like in 10 years, 15 years? You know, now we're seeing outdoor spaces becoming more important, and people talking about getting outdoor living, and we're talking about health and welfare and wellness. I see great strides in medical things in houses, devices and connectivity and the Internet of Things and smart houses and all that stuff. It's coming. I mean, we already have, you know, we have all the things that, you know, you can pre-do your doorbell and pre-do your lock and do your garage and all that stuff. That's great and everything. That's nothing compared to what's happening in the future.
Doug, when you look out to the future, what lights you up? What are you inspired by, either as a consumer or as a, in your professional role?
I think technology, you know, continue to use it the right way, although I picked on it earlier. You know, it is a good thing. It helps us do things faster. You've got to grasp it. You've got to grasp the change. Hopefully they won't make technology where things won't talk to one another, but that would make life a little bit easier. And I'm still waiting for the day where there's no pennies or dimes or nickels floating around or dollar bills. Everything's going to be done off a card or of your eye or your touch your finger. It's coming. The driverless car is coming. So I'm guessing the cash and maybe the government can save some money without printing all this coin and all this stuff. And I think that'll be.
We're going to have houses without garages.
Oh, my husband just think will hate
what,
that.
Just think of what your house is going to look like now. It'll look great.
And there'll be less junk accumulation as well.
You don't have any place to put it.
Right.
You
know? I'm for that. Paris, we'll give you the final word here. What lights you up? What are you inspired by about the future, either in your work or in your life?
You know, I think for on a professional level, it's just the endless opportunities. There are just so many opportunities out there on with technology and hearing all the exciting things that Dennis is talking about. So, personally, I may be looking for a new home because I'm thinking my home was built before 2006. So
it's a pig. You got to get rid of it.
But I need a garage for my husband. Okay, a very big garage. So now I think you know what's exciting is there are you know from when I started 35 years ago. I mean, my gosh, you learned how to do a checkbook register, and now I can transfer money on my phone. I mean, many times I'm in a grocery store and I'm like, oh my gosh, how much money do I have in my account? And I can easily transfer money. So I love the idea of endless opportunities. And all we have to do as people is imagine it. And hopefully someone else really smart is going to be able to build it so we can have it, you know, build it and they will come.
Well, until we change the fundamentals of human nature, home is still where the heart is. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate very much the three of you and the heart that you're bringing to your work. Dennis Webb, Vice President of Operations for Fulton Homes, Paris Davis, the Arizona Retail Banking Division Manager at Washington Federal, and Doug Reynolds, the SVP of Washington Federal in Arizona. Thank you all for joining us here today.
Thank you.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.